Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Gavin Allwright. He's the Secretary General of the International Windship Association based in the UK. First and foremost, Gavin, a very welcome to this interview.
Thank you, Bo. It's my pleasure to be here.
Same, same. As I do with all my accused or interviewees, as we call them, I always allow them to elaborate a little bit on how they got to the position that they are in. And the same with you, Gavin. How come you are in this seat?
That's a good question. A little bit of a long story. So for about 10 years when I was based over in Japan, I was working for a small NGO that was developing sail and solar panel, PV panel vessels for developing countries. Mm-hmm. And during that process, and I came very much into the maritime sector from the sustainable development side, during that process, I was able or met a lot of the proponents of sail and wind propulsion in the sector, but really saw that there was a lot of competition going on, but there was no market. And so we came together in 2013 with a couple of other founding members and said, well, look, we need to really develop a market, communicate the robustness of the technologies, etc. And because I was out of the 12 founding organizations, I was the one that didn't have a project at that time, and knew everybody within this in the circle. So I was elected as the founding Secretary General and continued in that position for the last 10 years.
Okay, that's very impressive. Japan, is there any reason why it was developed, shall we say, in Japan, or is it because they were first with it, or?
No, it just happened to be that particular project. I was based over in Japan, and my family, my wife's Japanese, and kids grew up there. And I was very heavily involved with sustainable development over there. Mm-hmm. And the maritime sector reared its head, and my wife's family were all were shipbuilders, shipbreakers back in the day. Okay. So it seemed like a natural development.
Yeah, definitely. That's very interesting, Gavin. Tell our viewers about windship. I mean, propulsion by wind power. We all know wind power offshore or onshore, but seldom have we heard about it, except for sails maybe, but on commercial ships. Where are we today with it, actually?
Well, we're coming on the back of about 5,500 years of history around wind propulsion in shipping, sort of went to sleep a little bit for about the last century. And we've got that resurgence, but it's a resurgence really around with a lot of modern technology and modern developments and a clearer understanding of how these technologies work, the materials involved, and actually fundamentally how to integrate wind propulsion efficiently into the modern ships at the size and scale that they are, but also the myriad of systems that I would say a ship is a system of systems. Integrating those and then optimizing the technologies themselves. And currently we have, actually as of yesterday, an announcement, we have 54 large vessels installed with some form of wind propulsion, another 7 that are wind ready. Mm-hmm. And there's an order book of over 70 ships for delivery over the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And about half of those, maybe 2/3 of those have been retrofit. Another 1/3 have been new build. And maybe the final thing to say there, we're also starting to see larger primary wind vessels coming in, so which can actually generate 50% plus of their energy from wind propulsion systems.
Okay. It's really impressive. I mean, I remember coming from Denmark. I remember the first wind turbines, mm-hmm. Denmark was pretty famous with Vestas and whatnot. And they were like 20 meters long. Now you have blades up to over 100 or 200 meters. I mean, It's nobody would have predicted that. But in the Windship Association, what can you tell us? You have a it's a bunch of members. It's an association. Who would ideally like to join your association?
Well, everybody's welcome. Yeah,
Okay.
we're very welcoming. I would say the Wind Propulsion family is a very open and collaborative family. But our full members, and we have a do have a restriction on who can become a full member. That's restricted for companies and developers that are highly active within the wind propulsion field. So that's technology developers themselves, shipping companies that have installed systems, R&D centers that are testing and evaluating systems, this type of thing. And then we have associate members who are connected or active in the field, but not it's not maybe not their primary business. And a good example are the six class societies who are members. They're associate members. So we have a little bit of separation, a little bit of independence there for them and for us. But we collaborate very closely with those groups as well.
But it makes sense because if you allow every Tom, Dick, and Harry in there, then they start by losing focus and they start selling all kinds of other things that has nothing to do with your objective, right? So,
Absolutely, absolutely. And we also have about 100 registered supporters who are micro entities, academics, etc. So
Very cool. Gavin, how many members would you say you have overall, and what do you do besides, of course, this fantastic interview? What do you do overall to promote yourself? You go to expos, I guess.
yeah, sure. Well, we've got I'd actually have to check because I'm not 100% sure as of today because we've added a few new members, but over the last 6 months. But we're over 200 in those full categories. So probably around about 80, 70 to 80 full members, 40 plus associate members, and then 70, 80 maybe more registered supporters. But we then have a much wider network of literally thousands of interested parties who get our newsletter or involved in projects. That membership is very organic. So we don't go out and recruit new members or do membership drives. That's basically companies, ship owners coming to us, wanting to really build this market and develop the policy frameworks around the development of wind propulsion. So it's rather than a kind of standard trade association. We're very much developing this framework with active contributors rather than providing services to members, as it were.
I understand.
The activities that we actually do are obviously we do a lot of around the communications, although that is actually a little bit less, or it will be a little bit less coming forward because really the market is starting to take over and there's a huge dissemination from our members, from organizations that are involved with this. So we don't really need to sell the wind so much as to really create the environment for not the initial uptake of wind propulsion. Now it's about scaling and dissemination of the technologies. And that's regulatory, policy, financial, etc.
Okay, I understand. It must be very interesting to be part of this. I mean, I had no idea that already dozens of ships actually are using wind propulsion. The only one I can recall seeing was one big one from MOL, Mitsui. I think they've been very keen on this when I read their newsletters. I mean,
Absolutely.
there are a couple of big bulk carriers out there that have How do they actually do it? Where are they built these units, or what do you call it? Equipment for it.
Yeah, the equipment. Well, about 85% of our members are based in Europe.
Okay.
So there's been a lot of technical development or technology development in Europe. But as we know, the majority of shipping and certainly the majority of shipbuilding is happening in Asia. And I've just actually just come back a few days ago.
Right.
So China's already 20 plus ships have been installed with wind propulsion there, and they're
Okay.
also developing their own technologies as well, or versions of
Oh.
technology. Japan, I think the leading six Japanese ship owners in over there, all of them have wind propulsion installation projects, so they're either installed or moving towards installation. And Korea, I believe all three of the major shipbuilders have wind propulsion programs where they're either installing non-Korean technologies or developing in-house technologies as well. So we
Okay.
should see that coming into the market in the next sort of 12 to 18 months as well. So there's a large, just to give you an idea, we've just had a Valemax installed in China,
Oh.
was put into operation about 2 weeks ago. So effectively the large, I think it's probably the largest ships on the ocean
Wow.
already with wind propulsion systems.
That's impressive. And what's the for a layman like me, what's the take on savings? I mean, what would be the savings on a big vessel like that?
Sure. So from an association point of view, we don't generally get involved too much in our members'
No.
activities, but what we say usually is 5 to 20% for a retrofit with potential to be optimized out to about 30%. But what's really important, the caveat that's really important on those numbers is that's on a motor vessel operational profile. So you're not changing your routing, you're not changing anything in your operations
No.
to optimize wind. So that's a simple ship with the systems put on board, and that's what you get.
Right.
Now, if you actually start then adjusting your operations and maybe motoring to where better wind conditions are, you can start multiplying that
Wow.
quite substantially.
Yeah.
Primary wind, of course, anything up to 100% or even beyond, if
Yeah.
you're able to capture the excess wind. But I'll say most of the retrofits on the very large vessels are going to be sort of 5 to 10%, just because those vessels are not optimized for wind. The
Sure.
design is not optimized for wind, but could be substantially more on certain routes, substantially more on certain directions as well.
Yeah. And of course, if the bunker prices go up or there's another crisis somewhere, I mean, anything saved is a gain, isn't it? I mean,
That's very true. And if we look at just the two crises, the two canal crises that we've had recently,
yeah.
obviously the Suez Canal is not quite a no-go area, but it's massively diminished
Oh, yeah.
in traffic. So you're putting a ship around the Cape to get to Europe from Asia. You're heading into very substantial wind patterns there.
Yeah.
So the And much longer routing, so you can get very substantial benefits. A similar issue with the Panama Canals had some issues with water levels.
Right.
So you either wait for that to be fixed, or you take the ship around the Cape if you can. And again, increasing dramatically your fuel burn and your eco footprint. If you're making a 10% or more reduction there, then you're really substantially saving money there.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting to see what will happen with the Suez Canal in general. I mean, I actually, as a quick note, I was actually around the Cape on the way to Japan on a vessel in March this year as a passenger.
Oh,
So,
really? Yeah. So you enjoyed some
I
wind
traveled
out there, yeah?
quite a lot, especially when we turned the Cape Good Hope. You know, it was quite bumpy, but. I always make sure I get drunk before I get seasick. So,
That's an interesting solution.
yeah.
I don't know if you're recommending this in the interview, but
No, we are not getting any favors from any distilleries. So,
Fair enough.
no, but I know what you mean. This is it's a big change. I mean, we increased the transit time with almost 3 weeks to get to Japan but the insurance company wouldn't let us sail through the Suez.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah, of course. But Gavin, listen. So this is a technology that's for sure here to stay, and for lack of a better word, it's gaining wind now, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. I mean, we've got what we're estimating, and this is fairly conservative, and of course it's a forecast, so right off the bat it's wrong. We understand that, but what we're seeing, and we can hindcast this as well, is a doubling of installations, and that's a doubling of the ships installed every year, every 12 months. But actually, the installations, the numbers of systems and the size and the power of systems, we could be looking more like tripling the number of actual systems installed, but roughly doubling the number of ships. So we should hit that sort of magic 100 number sometime next year. And then we're really seeing an inflection point in the market coming around 2026. So partly that's driven by having enough demonstrators in all of the segments of shipping. Container ships will lag a little bit because of challenges around deck space
Of
for
course.
systems. However, all of the other segments, ro-ro, all of the other major segments, ro-ro, smaller general cargo, bulkers and tankers, those segments at various different sizes have 3 points of reference or more at that stage. But also 2026 is really we will see the first reporting year for FuelEU Maritime and payments coming in from there. And there's a wind reward factor within the FuelEU Maritime regulation, so you get additional benefits from having wind installed, which would make you compliant out to 2030 just from the wind. EU ETS will be at full scale by 2026, and we should also see the IMO regulations being signaled at least to the market that this is what is coming down the line from a technological point of view, or a technical measure point of view, and an economic one. So demonstrators, also the cost of systems is starting to reduce as economies of scale pick up, learning curve picks up, with maybe not the price coming down necessarily, but definitely the production cost and the lead time is reducing.
It's yeah, of course. I mean, if you the wind is definitely blowing in your direction. If we also mention that the legal framework is coming down, there's some certain waypoints that you have to catch. So you're it's certainly it seems to me that you are in the right association at the moment.
I like to think so. Yeah, I think it's also, and as you'll know, if you're talking with anybody in the industry, the debate around alternative fuels and zero emissions fuels, there's a lot of concern at the moment about will these be available, at what price will they be available, will the infrastructure be able to be ramped up quickly enough to deliver all of these fuels in time for that 2030 indicative checkpoint, and indeed, the roll up and scaling for 2040 as well. So what we're seeing is an increased interest in off the shelf solutions. So wind propulsion obviously being one, but energy efficiency measures really are ramped up, and also voyage optimization approaches. And if you combine all of those three, that can be a really, really substantial bulwark to actually deliver on that 2030 goal.
Interesting, Gavin. I must say it's been very, very interesting talking to you and hearing your view on this because we are inundated with green this and green that and to actually know what's going on in the shipping business also from a wind perspective has been very interesting.
Well, you're
I want
welcome, and I just like to say, actually, we're hoping we can lose the green moniker at some point and just have that as the new normal. And then anything that's not green, then we give that another label.
Exactly. People are getting a kind of green fed up at the moment, I think.
Absolutely.
So, Gavin, I want to say formally many, many thanks for joining this interview.
You're welcome. You're welcome. My pleasure. Anytime.
Definitely, same here. And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today has been the Secretary General of Mr. Gavin Allwright of the Windship Association, based in the UK. A most interesting gentleman, and certainly the wind is blowing his way. From me in Project Cargo Weekly, thank you very much, and I'll get back to you with more in the near future. Thank you.